It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
A special edition of Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Lancaster, New Hampshire, at Rogers Campground, Porkfest 2001, because we have always special to talk to Dr. Frank Tambury, and a special on a special, special day, because we're all special. Well, what we're going to do is get caught up with Dr. Frank Tambury, Kearney Report, pretty much not here. I mean, people are really solution oriented and they're not keeping track of, they are looking for the long game. But it's always good to check in with Dr. Frank because, man, you want to know how bad things are. He'll tell us all about it. I get messages from him and all the videos I got to watch to, you know, bring me down from my high if I'm free. And I'm going, okay, I got to watch this one too. You know, so Dr. Frank, you know, give me the greatest tragedy of the week that you want to share with us. Bring me down, man.
For anyone new to the show, that's a heck of an intro. I never took our show that way. But, I'm not tragedy. I mean, Donald Trump is already ticking off, speaking of Trump, is already ticking off the left because they kind of like watching Michael Myers or Jason from Friday the 13th. They keep thinking he's down and he's done, and he keeps getting back up. And they can't understand how he's the number one contender for president in 2024 by their own metrics. And their heads are exploding right now. Like they just don't get it. I'm going to go back to one of the axioms I mentioned back in 2015, the two of us started arguing on this show on the Trump Report. I've said this over and over. You can take this to the bank. I've said the left or anyone will never defeat Donald Trump, whether in office or outside. You will not beat Donald Trump unless you truly understand why people voted for him, not what the left thinks that people voted for him because it's a dog whistle to make America white again or any kind of BS that they keep trying to spin. But I've told my lefty friends, you know, you'll pull your hair out trying to defeat something because you don't understand it. And that's the key. So anyway, I'll start off with that little optimistic, because I'm not that pessimistic from that point of view. I do think the country, we are in a whole different, I think though, in all seriousness, the pessimism, I'm sensing the breakdown in many areas, and there's some things we can chat about today. First is, I heard that you did not go into it, not that we have to, but there's the John McAfee story, which I know is probably a story for a different guest that kind of goes into this more, but I wanted to talk about how, you know, they're using that he's been Epstein'd, and how Epstein now is a verb, and what that represents as far as the breakdown in what people, the expectations of our country of fairness and justice. It's a larger issue. A big story, I think the biggest story of the week, if not maybe in the year or so, in my opinion, is the Virginia school board fiasco. I'm sure you heard about, and how the parents are standing up, not just in Virginia, but around the country. I think that is really the seminal event. And I wanted to explore that about why this is, my blood pressure went through the roof, which takes a lot anymore, except for being on this show. But I'll tell you what, it floored me. And it's not, at first I thought it was because I have a 4-year-old right now, I have a child to worry about the system, but I was going to homeschool her anyway. But it has a deeper manifestation. And I'll just lead on this point. During the French Revolution, you know, the French Revolution was a bunch of men that were busy arguing about politics and how things should be done. The revolution really never took off until the women finally got involved. And that is what I think is happening now with this critical race theory and the school boards and the boards just muting people and shutting you down. When now you're taking the children away, or at least the concept of educating kids, and the parents have no say, and the moms now are standing up. That has been the secret ingredient. I'm not saying the women haven't been fighting. God, Donna Hancock is as important as what you do with Freedom's Phoenix. But as a whole, the zeitgeist of this movement, it's going to be when the women in the middle finally stand up. So I wanted to explore that a bit more. Also, I did, as far as the culture war, I do play doctors sometimes when I'm not on the show. And I saw a bunch of patients in Seattle. I go up there about every 3 months. Although it's been a year or a year and a half or whatever since the COVID. So I've not been up there. I told them I refuse to go to Seattle and do prostate exams in the Chaz. I haven't been up there. But just recently with things loosening up, and I had a very interesting experience, very bad overall, but interesting experience going up to Seattle, which, of course, is the antithesis of Phoenix, Arizona, as far as the culture. As far as where
well,
both states are.
Did you wear your mask on the plane?
I did. And guess what? My mask says Trump 2024. So I pissed off. I didn't know how many tourists didn't want to serve me. So I wore my Trump mask everywhere in Seattle, the airport, the Uber, everything. And you know, the biggest comment was the Uber driver. And he was from Vietnam. Vietnamese Uber driver. Says, he goes, actually, I had my mask was says it's Trump 2020. It's my 2020 mask. And he says, sir, I don't like your mask. And I said, why? I was surprised, the Uber driver. He said, because it should say Trump 2024. He's like, sorry, Trump for Vietnam. So he's stuck there in Seattle. But it was a very interesting trip. The new security systems, which I want to tell you about. And, you know, I'll tell you, it reminds me of what you say, Ernie, often. Which is, you know, do you still feel free? And I know this is going to seem like I'm joking here. I'm not, and I'm not obtuse to all the problems of government and the restrictions. But I want to just, in my opening here with this, I'm sure you have some things to throw at me here. And Ernie, please do not sit there and gloat and this and that. I told you, I already get it. I'm not that obtuse with
whatever it is. I told you. So.
I know. I was coming. No, I get it. I'm not that lost about what's been happening, but there becomes like a turning point for many of us in different ways. For a lot of Americans, it took 2016 for the average American to realize that the media maybe doesn't always tell the truth, you know, for a lot of people, or that the election process is not necessarily on the straight up. A lot of people just figuring that out last year. But for me, I think the concept you've always said, do you feel free? Do you not feel free? And this and that. And yeah, I know there was all sorts of restrictions, regulations, everything. But my trip this past weekend for me was a crossing of the Rubicon. It was a turning point in a way where I sat there from the minute I walked into the terminal, just warning and threat from the government over and over. You know, you can't do this. You can't do that. You have to be in this line. You have to remember. Got to cover your nose. If you pass this line, the TSA has access to this and this. The new security systems, they have a new x-ray, wherever the heck this thing is, a machine, and they put me through the beta test line. That's not even in Seattle yet. It's only in Phoenix and a couple cities. And man, guys, this machine, it sits there and reads your stuff like completely. It's just like right out of Total Recall now. And they can take the imaging and they can move it around in 3D and literally slice up what you're looking at in 3D. I couldn't believe what I was watching. Matter of fact, they tore all my stuff apart, not because of my rectal probe or my prostate ultrasound machine, which usually sets them off because they've never seen that machine. This time that went through no problem. Do you know what set it off? My 25-year-old prostate cancer medical model kit. I bring with me, and Ernie's seen it, these little plastic models of fake prostates that demonstrate different types of cancer.
I know why.
I mean, I use it. And believe it or not, it set it off. And then the female TSA lady, she's just there, and she says, "Sir, can you explain why this looks green? Because two of the prostate cancer, the really bad cancers, had this green thing that was showing up as flagging on the imaging." First off, she's asking me why it's green. Like, lady, this is not my damn job. I don't know why it's green. Like, I was just pissed the whole thing. But it's astounding. It's like,
okay, I'll tell you why.
It turns out it was, I think, it's because they used in there some kind of gel or some kind of biomass that they filled in to give it a tone. So after 25 years, it hasn't solidified or dried out. And apparently it looks like it's a liquid explosive in that model. But anyway,
well, my wrist support for my mouse, you know, the little wrist pad thing. If I take that particular one and it has those little plastic beads in it and so on, for whatever reason, that particular one sets off what you have. So it's probably kind of the same plastic or something. And they think it's like a plastic explosive or it turns green on their thing or whatever. So if I want to make sure that I get certs and I put the right bumper stickers in there and I want to, you know, I go, "Oh, there's nothing sharp in there, officer." I mean, you know, if I wanted to, you know, make sure that I get, they get an education on all the books and stickers and everything I want them to, I make sure I bring that mouse. I put it in my bag. I put it at the bottom of one of the big things where I put all the flyers and books and whatever I want. And they pull that thing every single time and go through while I do the opt out. I never go through their machines. I'm always opt out. And you want a private screening? No, I want everybody to see, you know? So I make a big deal out of it. That's a date with my TSA. But, you know, I also have, you got to take out all your computers. You know, you take it out and you put it in this green bin. Well, I have, two computers, an iPad, and my electronics, and my shoes, and my jacket. If I have less than four gray bins, I did it wrong, okay? So I make sure they got to carry everything, man. We're doing the show. So it's and I learned that with that wrist pad that I make sure I get extra show.
No, that's fantastic. You're making this search even an education. I love it. And normally I do the pat downs too with it too. But it seems like with this new machine, they don't even have to even do pat downs. Like, they can see everything literally.
No, so, I've seen the scanners. Anyway. I ain't doing their crap. I don't trust them. Screw them.
No, I know.
Especially
I know,
when you're magnetized and you go through their machine of freaking, they zip it up to your brain or something. I mean, God knows what they're doing.
So you go through this, and I'm watching them, you know, tear the thing apart, and then, you know, you've got them, you know, asking me why it's green, like putting me on the defensive, like I would know, and of course, that was an interesting conversation. So anyway, I'm going around. So then I finish that. So you're standing in line, and all the warnings and such. Basically, what I'm saying is, if you made a drinking game and to do a shot or take a sip, when you're in an airport, by the time you walk in, how many times you hear warnings and regulations and threats about federal law and this and that over the loudspeaker and the signs and everything. It's like it finally hit me. Not
PPE vending machines.
No, exactly. Yeah, the vending machines. Every step of the way, every step of the way, and standing in line for the plane, and then all the regulations with that, it's got to be done a certain way, and a different way here, and the way you have your mask and all, and then to be on the plane, and then, of course, in order to take off, it was like a whole new set of instructions about COVID stuff, and of course, the rules about only one person standing up at a time to use the bathroom in case someone's going to rush the pilot, and they're still stuck on the smoking. If you tamper with the smoking detectors, you know, we're going to arrest you and you do this. I mean, it was nonstop. And it finally hit me. It was nonstop since I effing walked in that building. And I heard you, which probably angered me the most. I'm hearing Ernie Hancock. I'm trying to turn it off my brain. And I hear Ernie going, feel free. Hey, Frank. Hey, Frank. I'm right here. Kind of like the little devil angel, you know, sitting on my shoulder. It was like freaking Ernie Hancock. Go, "Hey, Frank, you feel free now?" I mean, seriously, I heard you, and I was thinking of this audience, which I know this audience, we're all on the same page, but it was a level ratcheted up. And again, many of you probably have not flown yet. Many of you have since COVID, but it's just one more layer that we had before 9/11. Then there's after 9/11, and then there's like, you know, every time something happens, they just add more layers to it to the point where we're so saturated. And that's just the plane. So, I mean, I'm to the point now, I don't even care about the money. I mean, I might not even go back to Seattle again. It's just made me just so, just.
Did I lose you? You there? What about now, Frank?
Oh.
You got it?
Yeah, I'm here. Hello.
Okay. Yeah. Now we got, you know, we have, you know, I tell you, the communication, you know, it goes in and out because you got 3,000 people. I don't know. It's a lot. And this is the biggest, most packed Pork Fest ever. Everybody came. And so the bandwidth is limited, but Derek got Starlink and he put it up, and then he has repeaters that go around, and we're getting like 100 meg of, man, we're kicking ass, but it goes out every, you know, a few minutes or something for 10 seconds or something like that because you don't have full coverage yet. And then it'll, you know, cause problems, but we're not using that. I converted over to that now. It'll probably work better, but I was on, you know, T-Mobile thing. And, you know, so communication is still a big deal. And the solutions are coming. It's getting a lot better. But for live shows, now, if you were uploading a file or you're downloading a movie or something, Starlink works great. But when you're doing a live show or something, that's why I don't use it that much. But we're using it now. So we'll see how this goes. We'll at least go till the top of the hour. But the, right, you know, in response, you left off.
I just wanted to finish the point about the culture between Seattle and Phoenix, despite all the federal regulations and the airport and all of that I was talking about. The one thing that stood out between the two cities after a year, it's kind of like being a frozen in time, and you see how both cities, the conservative one with a conservative, supposedly conservative governor. I'm not trying to give too much to Ducey here. He's trying to run for Senate. But regardless, you got a conservative state and a very lefty liberal Chaz state, right? So the big difference, Ernie, was outside the terminal. Everything else seemed very similar because all the regulations, you know, the federal regs. But when I was in Seattle, when I got dropped off and I was outside the terminal, outside, everybody had their masks on. Everybody. I mean, you know. And then when I was in Phoenix, outside the terminal, or the minute people walked outside the terminal and hit the 115 degrees, the masks were off. It was fascinating to see, because that's the line. That's like, yeah. In Uber, you have to wear a mask in the Uber. You have to wear a mask the minute that you walk into the airport.
Okay, now says who? When did that happen? Because we go into airports, nobody says anything. It's when you get on the plane.
Right.
Well, I mean, did you try to not wear masks?
Oh, yeah, no, I didn't. I didn't for walking around. There was a few people in Phoenix as well. In Seattle, though, everybody was. It was as far as being inside. So whether it's the culture or whether they probably cracked them. They probably also, if you don't wear one up in Seattle, I guess the thing is you stand out more. So it's easier for them to come after you if you're the only person. In Arizona, you know, a lot of people were not wearing it, or they had it down under their nose or whatever their protest was with it. But in Seattle, it was complete uniformity. You know,
Seattle, maybe Spokane, but Eastern Washington State, they no. I tell you one thing, we had, we went to the J. Edward Griffin Red Pill Expo, and a couple of days after, we had our friends from Washington and us and Benny Wills and Don and I had dinner with G. Edward and his wife. And the whole thing was, he's really wanting to push, you know, Red Pill University, a lot of, you know, getting aware of a lot of the stuff that they're doing. We got autonomy we just did with Richard Grove, and I'm all these relationships, all my friends, all these people that, you know, if we could only, we'll get some help, or we got an organization, we'll go whip ass somewhere. And I go, Arizona and Washington. I go, that they're two places that, you know, that I got, you know, contacts with, and we want to, and got money, and let's go. So when I come back to Arizona,
we're going to have us some fun, Frank.
I am like, here we go. And these guys, because all this audit, everything that comes out of this, I guarantee they are not going to go to paper. They are not going to fix this election process. This is, you got, you know, ex-president of the Senate and Secretary of State Ken Bennett, all of a sudden he's going to fix it. I go, What the hell were you doing when you're president of the Senate and secretary of state? If you didn't fix it then, you're just part of the freaking problem. So I'm like, oh, hell no. We're going to go have us some fun because this is the last chance we get to have any semblance of we get to have a say. And everything else is just, it's just psyop. And I go, you want to play politics, then you got to make it to where it's paper at the precinct counted by little old ladies, us watching, and you're done in a few hours. And if you don't do that, then you're part of the problem. I am done with any kind of semblance of this political process other than, you know, it's a soapbox for us getting me a, be a butthead. So I'm bringing it. Arizona this year, 22, I'm bringing it. And then it's going to be general public opinion.
Yeah.
No, I mean, here we go.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's going to be a watershed event for many. And, you know, it's been a degradation of confidence in the system. It's been fun in one level, but disheartening to see many of my friends and family, I'm sure with many of you listening, who are going through this process. It's like the stages of grief. You know, first there's denial.
Yeah.
Anger, and then all of a sudden acceptance, and there's different stages to this, and I forget the five of them here in order, but that's what people are going through now. Libertarian
denial, anger,
like, welcome to the party.
Well, we're here at the salmon all come up river to get the pork fest kind of thing. These people are already, they're there. I mean, there's a lot of people that come that want to kind of figure it out, and they network and so on, but it has been it's been interesting. There has been such a realization that we're next. This has been my big giant thing since I don't know if I talked to you about it before. Did we take last week off? I think we did. And what happened, I did a show with Corbett, and it just dawned on me, one of his shows that he did 7 years ago in 14 about China, New World Order, and blah, blah, blah. What happened, it finally filled in the puzzle for me. Yale had a Yale in China to where they were, you know, influencing the culture there with their university of supporting the next leaders of whatever. And it was Skull and Bones that supported Mao being in charge of the communist revolution of the whatever. Well, he did the same thing in the Russian Revolution. They did the same thing with Hitler, the same thing. I'm going, they know that collectivism doesn't work. Why are they doing it? Because it doesn't work. They need to have support of these collectivist regimes so that they, one, aren't a competition by supporting individual rights down to the individual doing whatever, that they have the ability to control them when they want to have some control. They got some central power of your social credit score brought to you by IBM and Google. I mean, you know, this is all part of the plan. So when I started to realize what was going on in China was just another step of this whole thing, I go, I get it now. So I go to James and Richard Grove today, and I'm going, well, they're just making sure they got these collectivist competition to not muck up with their monopoly. And now it's America's turn. They're coming here to eliminate the middle class and do what they've done or prevented from happening. This individual right thing, this self-responsibility, this property ownership protection, this private property, it's mindset. And you're not going to own anything and you're going to like it. And it's coming to freaking America. This is what's happening. And I'm going, there is no stopping these guys. They are going to do any and everything they can to bring this about. The only resistance is America, the Declaration of Independence, the proper rule of government, individual rights. That is what they're worried about. That is what they've been trying to hold down around the world. And while they let America think it was free a little bit or whatever, they've been squashing the shit out of any kind of Declaration of Independence document of mindset around the world. And I'm going, okay, I get it. We're next. So what do? Got to do all that America stuff, you know? So this is, it's become very clear to me. So now I'm going, all right. And once you kind of make people aware of that, that there's a mission. What's the solution? Well, it's individualism. You know, let's get down to decentralized. Of if you're going to have a government, what its proper role is, blah, blah, blah. When do you do that? Yeah, during election process doesn't hurt, but how do they prevent it? You don't get to have a say. There is, yeah, we get you to go worship the, you know, diebold touchscreen machine at the altar of whatever the hell, but it's controlled by them. No way in hell are they going to have an accurate will buy for a people thing. That is not in their agenda. They are not going to risk trillions of dollars in budget line item if I get to spend money and just print it and give it to my buddies. If they let the people have a say, that might stop. To think that Ken Bennett, being president of the Senate and secretary of state Republican in Arizona, is the spokesperson for accurate election makes me want to hurl. And I'm going, oh, you want to play? Ernie's coming back. We're going to have us some fun.
Yeah, and you're going to have a heck of a more energized audience. I mean, more than before, because so many people have been red-pilled. We'll get to a little bit later. Bill Maher, the comedian that just kind of annoys a lot of us, he's now getting red-pilled. I mean, the dividing lines are changing. I think more and more, you know, the milquetoast fence-sitters are waking up, which is more ammo and more people listening to shows like this. But what I was saying earlier is think about the stages of grief or disbelief that so many people have gone through. I say it often on the show. I don't want to rehash the whole thing. But how many of our family and friends just they couldn't even listen to anything we would say 10 years ago, talking about the economy having a problem. Why are you buying gold? There's not enough gold for everybody out there. You know, Bitcoin, what the hell is that? I mean, Bitcoin's a whole other issue. But, I mean, people couldn't understand, or the voting system, you know, about Ron Paul. I mean, when he's running in 2008, and for many people who got awoken with Dr. Paul, you know, of course, some of us were back in 1988. But regardless, it's like, you know, this has been going on a long time, and we've always been that 1%. Not that 1%, but, you know, we're like 1% of the population that was questioning this, the third parties. And I'd even throw out, I'd even give some credit to the Green Party and Ralph Nader's people and people who've been fighting the system from the other side, you know, showing us how corrupt the voting system is, at least from that point of view, and corporate America. And, of course, you know, the thing is, the left looks at corporations as the evil, whereas conservatives tend to, or maybe libertarians tend to see that the government is the evil, and of course they allow the big business because of crony capitalism. Regardless, it winds up being the same thing. I see it in this profession where people from the left don't trust they won't trust the vaccines because pharmaceutical companies are corporations. They don't trust the corporations, whereas conservative naturopaths, you know, they're against the vaccines because the government is the one behind it. So both sides now, we don't trust either from either side. Then we get to the media. 2015-16 was a watershed for many normies out there who finally realized the media maybe doesn't play fair. And then after 4 years of watching Trump being bashed over and over, it just was nothing but again, more star systems slipping through the fingers of the mainstream media and Operation Mockingbird, which most of this audience knows, you know, as far as the government sitting there and using their influence with the media. And the more they would clamp down the deep state through the media, through Operation Mockingbird, you know, the more people were woken up. Then we get to the election. It's like, okay, well, we'll be able to fix this during the election. I know, cough, cough, Ernie. During the election. And then, of course, this becomes an issue. People start to realize, you know, how that is not equitable, to keep it really simple, for right now. And so now the trust in the media is gone for people. The trust is gone for many and more and growing people. And now you've got also, of course, the trust in the judicial system for average people. And they're seeing it more and more. And you saw just the fact that Hillary Clinton is still out there laughing and cackling, and Joe Biden's son, and how, you know, he was protected. And yet you've got, and of course, people burning down cities, you know, with Antifa and riots and Molotov cocktails, and no problem. But if you happen to be some senior at a school board to speak as you were promised to speak, and they shut down the microphone, and you say, I'm not going until I get to speak, and then you turn, you get arrested by a bunch of cops, a bunch of coward cops doing that, right? Because they just don't want any arrest. The peaceful person who's showing up, right? Not the person throwing Molotov cocktails at buildings. No, no, and destroying store owners. That's not an issue. So right now, just to finish up, you got John McAfee. Not that the average person really knows or cares about him, but you've got John McAfee that's starting to go a bit viral. People talk. Tim Pool did a whole thing on it today, which I was surprised, discussing it and how people are kind of shrugging their shoulders. And just saying he was Epstein. I mean, Jeffrey Epstein now is a verb. And as funny as that might be, the real underlying problem, the collapse of the
you know, that news really country. shot through the park yesterday, and I've known John a long time, and I consider him a good friend. We hang, and I like, you know, his mindset, but he's definitely on the edge, you know. And it wouldn't surprise me, with having absolutely no evidence, that when he got the extradition thing and he's going to go into a United States cage, I wouldn't be surprised if he wouldn't give him the satisfaction that he had a plan to off himself or whatever anyway. It wouldn't surprise me. That doesn't mean that that's what happened. They don't want him to be an icon of whatever, but it could go either way with me. And with absolutely no evidence whatsoever either way, it wouldn't surprise me. He goes, screw you. I'm not giving you the benefit. And because he lived the life, everything he wanted to do, way he wanted to do. And once he got incarcerated, I think he knew that this would be his, get out of jail free card, you know. And but that doesn't mean that's what happened. I'm just kind of, I'm leaving that up.
No, exactly. But Ernie, and by the way, I have no problem chatting about it. I just don't know enough to really talk much about it.
I don't either. I know nothing. We'll look at it later, you know.
Yeah,
I thought it was a scam. I thought it was a goof. I didn't think he really. I just thought somebody just made it up. They go, no, it's confirmed. You go, really? Wow. Well, what deal did he make? I mean, or not make, or something. Hey, we got to take a break real quick. Hold on for just 40 seconds, will you? I got to go to the bathroom. I'll be right back. All we'll right. edit it out. Hold on. And we're back. All right.
So I just want to finish with the point, actually two things. First off, since we're coming back from break here, I just want to give a quick plug. I was invited to speak at the Breakfast Club, the Arizona Breakfast Club, for those of you here in Arizona.
Yeah, I saw that. We put that up.
Oh, you did? This Saturday, June the 26th, it's at a Denny's, the famous Denny's. It's at 7000 East Mayo Drive. It's close to the Mayo Clinic. In case someone has a heart attack sitting there listening to me or you're eating Denny's food, you got to watch that. But anyway, it's East Mayo Drive, Scottsdale, and it's a great location, a great group. So if you haven't been part of it, definitely show up. And if you can't make it to mine, that's fine. I just wanted to give a promo to a group that's been around for, what, decades. I mean, the ABC has been there, what, 50
almost
years
50
now?
Years, yeah. Yeah, we ran it for a long time until it kind of, they wanted to go more, Republican, and they had, and Terry Major wanted to take it on. But then COVID, they stopped it, and I wouldn't have stopped it. I would have found a play my backyard, whatever, which we'd done for a time. And it's when it's needed the most. I was like, no, now's not the time you stop. Now they're coming back. They get a little this political thing. I approach it totally differently. It's just I just get to put up signs. That's all I care about, And that's why when I come back, unless somebody convinces me different, I'm probably going to do a write-in campaign to generate a bunch of paper so they have to deal with it. That's what I know is going to muck up their system, depending on how they do their laws. And out of this whole thing, the third of the universe is looking at Maricopa County, and there'll be nothing fundamental will change, I guarantee. And that's why I have Liz Harris on, and Brakey, and Benny Smith, and all these guys are involved in the audit. And I go, they go, well, we got a subpoena. I go, it doesn't matter. These guys don't care, So
when you keep saying it's not going to change, you don't really mean that.
It's not going to change in the legislature. Not any fundamental. Are they going to be using
public
computers?
Opinion. Yeah, but it's public
I'm looking
opinion.
At the
that's
public
the
opinion,
point.
And the public opinion isn't going to, there's going to be a big giant parade that's going to be created, and you're going to have the wrong guys jump in front of it, and I have the solution. And the whole time I'm going to be there going, they're full of crap, and let me tell you what's really going on, and that's when they're going to start coming after me.
Mm-hmm.
Which
I want.
And the thing is and just to bridge the pre and post break here is just the big picture is what I'm bringing together between my experience at the airport, which is not unique, of course, between the media, breakdown, CNN and all of them, the New York Times. I mean, the New York Times was considered the gray lady. It was considered, the gilded newspaper that everyone, at least as a country, the New York Times and Walter Cronkite, or Ted Koppel. It was like, in theory, the two anchors that we could at least all start from, and then we can start debating and discussing from there. It's kind of like a talking point that we have discussions from. But the country now, we can't even agree on what the talking point is. We're not even listening to each other, including myself. And I have said on the show as much as you know, as much as maybe this audience doesn't like it, but I've talked about how I do listen to MSNBC and CNN. I have up until
so
just recently.
I don't have to.
Yeah, well, no, I stopped because you don't pay me enough, to be honest. But I'll tell you, I would listen to it because I was, you know, eating my own cooking, talking about how you need to listen to the other side, because that's what's holding us together. The problem is that the left never listens to conservative media. I mean, this has been going on for decades. It's not just recent. That's what's led to this. They get only, I think I've said on your show, the ones, there was a couple studies on this, that they get less than 3% of their news, media, and culture from the right. That is people from the left, right? Whereas people on the right or libertarians, you know, we actually get 30+% of
yeah,
our
no,
news,
I put it up on
Freedom's
Phoenix. You need to know what they're saying, man. This is what they're doing.
No, exactly. You have to hear the other side. But what's happening is more and more people, even conservatives that were the last bastion, and I hate to put it this way, but they were the ones in a way that were still keeping this country linked. As much as the right, I'm sorry, as much as the left kept pushing us off and having television shows where they wouldn't have conservatives, or they have one token conservative that wound up being Mitt Romney, thinking that he represents conservatives.
Right,
I mean, they
right.
just kept creating their own bubble that to go off. They didn't realize this, you know, over half this country, the silent majority,
doesn't matter.
They
control the box.
Well, they did. The thing
well,
is,
we'll
that's
see.
What they're losing right
we'll
now.
We'll see.
Well, that's what they're having panic modes over. And the more that they're trying to grab people and force you to watch their content, the more now that with YouTube and other sources where you can take what they said a few months ago and compare it to today. Remember, before they could lie and you'd forget about it 6 months later. Now, aside from them trying to take stuff down, but now you can compare what a politician said from before. You can compare what Dr. Fauci said before and then changes his mind. So now this is a unique situation in history where now we have a ledger, essentially. And again, forgetting the fact that many of these stories get deep sixed and the media is trying to change stories from the past. I get all that. But
America,
I mean, whole,
is
though,
bifurcating. It's going into the individual rights thing, which is what has been their threat. The individualism, the purpose of government to protect individual rights and not lock you down, not set curfews, not close your business. That was the reason government was there, was to prevent that, and they're the ones doing it. And when people realize that it is not by for of, and it never has been, and they come to that realization, all of a sudden America separates to where the individuals go, all right, fine. That's why RV sales are through the roof. That's why people are starting to, you know, be more nomadic, or they're starting to, you know, where is your America? Where are my ancestors lie buried? You know, the crazy horse thing. It's like, look, you know, this is ours. We are the people. We own it. And the purpose of government is to protect that. And that's what they're after. You'll own nothing and you'll like it. That's what we're up against. And I can see it. And I go, you guys just keep doing that. You keep taking that narrative, because it's not for a significant minority. They're not going to accept it. And then that's the battle. And we're engaged in it right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, there's so many layers to it. I mean, if you turn around, you tell people, you know, you're not, you know, not to own property, not to own a house. It's only for the corporate America. And you're going to like it. And you're going to eat cicada bugs. And like Bill Gates, him and Mr. I like to hang out with Jeffrey Epstein. By the way, Epstein, I mean, you've got him telling the world to get this mandatory vaccine when he's not a doctor, with all these problems, telling people to eat bugs. I mean, and while he's sitting there and is in the largest yacht in history, right? His new yacht he got a few years ago is like a floating palace. Nothing's ever been built like it before. So he can move around the world. He can go anywhere he wants as his own entity. And he's busy telling the rest of us how to live, right? I mean, I tell you what, Bill Gates is the epitome of a James Bond villain. I mean, if one actually exists, if you actually thought, what would a James Bond villain really be like from the other side,
if
you don't know from watching the movie, it's Bill Gates. I'm sure Bill Gates, like he probably wears one black glove and has a little white pussycat on his lap, I'll bet you anything. But anyway, so, I mean, this is sort of like the overall setup that they, when they want to take down the working spirit, the enthusiasm, the free market from Americans. I mean, it's one thing to do it, But what happens afterwards? You destroy the engine of creativity
and that's
and
their
enthusiasm.
Their goal. That's a very goal. That's the point that I'm trying to make. What the epiphany that I had is that it was China. I didn't really understand what was going on there. And then I understand that they, them, those around the world support these collectivist countries. And then that's why Google and every IT super duper tech of whatever is supporting what's going on in China. And then it went whole hog in Australia. And I'm going, whoa, man. And it's become clear to me they need to support these collectivist regimes so that they have the power to control enormous populations and landmass. You got Russia and China, hell, you got half the people and half the landmass. I mean, you know, and the resources that go with that. And they want it to not be imagine if you had individual rights protection in Russia and China. What would happen? You know, all of a sudden you'd have this enormous engine that of freedom and productivity that they'd never get a hold of. And America has represented that as just a concept, as a free people. So this ugly American traveling around the world, what they don't like is the assertiveness. And of course I can do that because I can. And the answer is always yes. And this arrogance they equate with Americans. And they go, this is not what I... we want. We need to have control, and they have to go after the engine of the spirit of America. And I remember when Ron Paul, when he was running in 08, he goes, we have to do this now so that we even understand the words, so that our heritage, our history, are the reasons why we created this country, and what makes us so productive compared to the rest of the world is not because we have any more resources than ourselves. It's the ideology. It's the philosophy of what America is. And that is the threat. And they're coming after us. And I'm like, that's why it was Freedom's Phoenix. From the ashes of Lady Liberty's torch is the Phoenix Freedom, you know, rebirth of. So I knew we had to go through this freaking in the 90s. When we created Freedom's Phoenix in 05, we had to have that concept in 96. I'm going, when video hits the internet, well, oh, that'll never happen, you crazy old man. That'll never, bandwidth, the blah, blah, blah. Yeah, well, when it happens, here we go. Boom, 05 YouTube started, here we go. And then, of course, they had to take over YouTube. Google buys them, and they turned it into, you know, the narrative. This is where it starts to make sense. Whenever you challenge their narrative, they don't care what you say or do, but what gets supported is the idea of collectivism has to be the supported narrative. And anything that goes against that in whatever form, that's where the attack comes. And I'm going, okay, the battle lines are clear now. What they are threatened by is the spirit, not the Constitution. You know, I'm not a big fan of Constitution. It's just, you know, how we're going to rule you. It's just another way. But that came a decade after the Declaration and the Articles of Confederation. They did this so that they could get a hold on America. And it's been a demonstration of them doing that piece by piece. And they have to make it to where it's not the United States, individual states, this federalism of you have a state, they have to have it. No, the commander and the great wife chiefs from Washington, D.C. going to tell you what's up. And when people are sort of like Texas and Florida, and we're going to make sure Arizona takes its place as it always should have been. And when we went back this last holiday season and how many people were in masks and so on, that's why we did a bunch of signs and we helped a lot of people and get the spirit kind of going back into it. I'm like, yeah, Arizona, you know, we're going to be making some news when we get back, because it's so simple. All you have to do is represent the ideology that people generally support anyway. They just need to understand that, you know, they're not there to help you. They're not there to benefit productivity and freedom and prosperity and property rights protect. That's not what their goal is. That was what they were chartered to do, but they're not. So now what do we do? And I'm trying to help any and everybody that understands that. We're going to take the love bus on the road in Arizona. We're going to focus on Arizona and Washington State. We got G. Edward Griffin bringing his red pill stuff. IPFS has been a big thing. We are making so much headway in that and platforming people. And I tell you, It is. I've been screaming this forever. It's just a philosophy of ones and zeros get stored, and I can access it from anywhere. You do that, and they can't censor it. What happens? I don't know, but that's the minimum requirement we need. Well, here it comes. Now what? I don't know, but it's going to be entertainment, Frank. I'll tell you.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you're talking about. I feel that, though, it's like Scooby-Doo, you know, and the damn dog and his five young friends, you know, they screwed everything up. I think that's how the system looked at it. Yeah, rut-row. Of course, I hated Scrappy-Doo. He was annoying. Basically, what you have is this system that really thought that everything was working as planned. I think they're sitting there, the Machiavellian, you know, biting their, chewing their little fingernail going, yeah, we got them, because they had the media. They really had the arrogance to the point where they were pushing conservatives off. Now, I know much of this audience really didn't care because we're already off the plantation anyway, but keep in mind, it was a slow purge that they began to increase. A lot of it started really started after Watergate. That's what gave the media kind of like the leverage to say, you see what happens when, and by the way, I'm not trying to protect conservatives, because as far as I'm concerned, Republicans created most of the problems that we have. And they're the ones that first started going into debt. They're the ones with the military industrial complex. They're the ones that created the deep state to protect them. And it was the left that was trying to protect themselves from the right. I mean, the whole McCarthyism, I mean, back then, you're a communist. I mean, now, of course, the left now accuses the right of being, you're a racist. It's the whole thing's twisted.
You're a capitalist.
Turned around. Yeah, no, exactly. But back then, though, in many ways, the conservatives are what created a lot of this. I'm not saying, you know, the left are innocent. But after Watergate, in a way, you know, it was almost like imagine if the whole left finally goes down because we finally prove that Clinton and all these people were part of Epstein's Island, and all the tapes come out from Jeffrey Epstein, and then all of Hillary Clinton's emails come out, and all of this stuff. Imagine if the mother load of Q actually exists. That's like, yeah, we'll see. But imagine all the stuff comes out, and finally, we can just put the kibosh. You know, that would be the equivalent of Watergate, in essence, right? And so you would think there's so much leverage would happen that you would just start to say, you know, it doesn't matter what the left says anymore. Now, many of us feel that way anyway, I myself included. But that's where the left came from after Watergate. It was sort of like the final proof of how frustrated that they were. So I kind of give them a little, you know, understanding from an historical perspective. But that led to this ongoing cockiness that got more and more to a purging. It started in the 70s. You know, then they had the equal time rule for talk radio that they were doing in the 70s and 80s. But eventually that led to, you know, a left-only media. Then you'd have a talking head show, like, you know, with David Brinkley, ABC News with David Brinkley, right? You would have all Cokie Roberts and all lefties, or Democrats, at least back then. And you'd have George Will, the one token Republican with a little bow tie. For you old timers, if you remember that. And most every show started to do that, where the conservative that makes up half this country was only one little minority on each of these shows. And then slowly, and then of course you had cable news. And then when the Clinton came in, that was the real push, because the Clintons really accelerated, you know, this leftist agenda. And then the pushback became Rush Limbaugh. So Rush Limbaugh wound up, that's why he took off. I mean, they also allowed franchises with radio, and that's a whole other issue where you couldn't have more than one market, but they decentralized talk radio, not to get into that right now. But so Rush Limbaugh and Howard Stern, I may add, both at the same time took off, and then you got Fox News sometime later because there was no voice at all. So that was one of the first demarcations where people were pushing AM radio. And then one news show, Fox News, for what it's worth, right? So that's all, and so it's gone. It just keeps magnifying since then. But the left, because I hang out with a lot of leftists, especially in medical school, they honestly never spend any time with a conservative, or God forbid, a libertarian. They don't even know what libertarians are. They never were experienced about this. It's kind of like the whole point of busing back from Philadelphia. You know, take white kids and put them into the urban black schools to learn and actually talk to a black person, realize that they're not that scary. I mean, that's kind of what the left needed to do. I was the only conservative that they ever met. I was told many times they couldn't believe that I was a Republican. Well, I call them not a Republican, I'm a libertarian. They put me in the same boat. The thing is, they said I was the only conservative they ever met. And they were shocked. They said, Frank, you seem so smart to be a conservative. That's what they would tell me. And they were trying to be nice. They were trying to be nice. Like they couldn't. No, seriously. I was at a doctor dinner once. And a lot of my friends just opened up. They said, you know, it was hard for me to believe that you're Republican. You know, like you seem so smart and you're educated. Like they couldn't wrap their head around it. They were expecting me to be Bubba sitting there scratching my armpits or something. That's what they expected. And so it began to show me how little that they understand what the other side is about. That's why I've hammered on your show so much about listening to the other side. And the culture issue, and they're
which is why with themselves. A campaign in 22 with a creative us bring the Lovolution back to Arizona again and do some butt whipping, yeah. It's going to be so easy. It's just going to be public opinion will have added to their repertoire of just understanding of why we do what we do. See, I don't have to convince them. I just want them to understand why I'm so convinced. If I do that, it's just different. It's a splinter in their brain that will be there for whenever they, you know, finally come to the realization of what's really going on. And what happens is when you have a army of socialized and collectivized, you know, entire generations with trillions of dollars and generations of government indoctrination, this is what the result is. But sooner or later, you know, they start to go, yeah, this isn't working. There's, you know, I may have got my social credit score up, but to somebody that's rating me that I don't care what they think anyway. So this is, it's changing. And I think that they had to do it now because they had to do it now. If they didn't get control now, forever would they lose control of this ideology that's coming up. And they didn't see the Lovolution. They didn't anticipate that. When Ron Paul did it, that was, whoa, man, we got to get control of this thing. So that's when they really came down. They started doing the deplatforming and censorship and everything in 2009 when I really noticed it. So that's why we just like, I'm not doing this traditional internet like everybody else is. I'm not, you know, because they're just going to snatch it, take it, repackage it. Cosby, come hang out of here, man.
And I want to piggyback with exactly what you were saying is kind of what my final point was, is that the system had this unplanned and they arrogantly were purging other viewpoints. And in their mind, anyone who was a conservative or libertarian, it was just some old guy that was wearing his little Marines cap at Thanksgiving dinner. And he was Uncle Joe, you know, strange Uncle Joe that, yeah, we just put up with him. And he's wearing his red, white, and blue. And yeah, okay. We're just waiting. Basically, and I mean this, the left, who never were around conservatives, honestly thought that conservatives were a dying breed of a bunch of old people that listened to Rush Limbaugh and counted their gold coins, and they were just going to die in a mountain somewhere. That's what I swear to God, that's what they believed. They didn't think anyone was there. They didn't understand over half this country that was holding silent, which is my anger, created this, not being involved in the school boards, not standing up, not, and of course, this audience doesn't have that problem, but most people, that's what they did. They've created this mess by not standing up. But it was the Lovolution combined with, and the reason Lovolution took off wasn't just the message, it was the timing with the internet. And
we're going to have to wrap it up. I got to get to
with technology and they're going around. Yeah.
I got to get to Crosby, the owner of Rogers is scheduled on now, so we'll wrap it up here real quick. But, you know,
So the technology. So anyway, the bottom line is that that's what they thought, and then the technology got ahead of the left. They didn't expect so many conservatives to be out there and to take advantage of this new technology. So it went from AM radio that was in the outskirts, and it went front and center on YouTube. They never thought YouTube would be nothing but cat videos, and now the cat's out of the bag. So the bottom line is, yes, I understand that they're going to push back, but Arnie, there's so many people now understand the corruption and understand the censorship that they can't
just paper over it like they were planning to do. Now, no matter how much they push down, the people will still be resisting regardless. That's the bottom line. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I guess we have to finish up.
Yeah. Well, you know, I it's always great talking to get just perspective. And I know we're going to have some fun in Arizona when we get back. And it's going to be, you know, it's developing. I've been working on getting a lot of resources and focus on everybody knows that we gotta. Yeah, we do. And I tell you, you know, Ernie and Donna is going to be in Arizona, do some ass whipping. You got a better place other than where, you know, somewhere else you can drag Ernie? Is that what's going to happen? You got something? You don't? Okay, well, guess what? Arizona. Get ready. Here it comes. You going to be able to help, Frank? You going to be part of? We're going to kick some ass?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have some fun.
All right. We're going to do that. Hear any report. Dr. Frank Tambor, it's always great to, you know, talk to you and everybody get our perspective because I see it, man. Here it comes. Everything we've been saying, I get to say I told you so a whole bunch of times. Oh, take a look at your phone. I sent you text messages of some shirts that are doing up here. I want you to see that. Go ahead and look at that real quick.
You know, I saw the Star Wars one. Who the hell did that?
Richard Grove did. When I did a presentation at Greater Reset in Austin, Texas a few weeks ago, he was watching my presentation. He goes, oh, that was great. And he sent me this Obi-Wan Hancock thing. And then they made these shirts and aprons and the kind of, you know, picked it. They're all over the place. You know, like, here comes one now. And I'm going, yeah, whatever, you know. It's cool. We'll put it in the show notes. People can see what it is. But they put my likeness on the shirt and made me Obi-Wan and whatever. It's fun. But the fact that the most flattering is that Richard Grove did it. You know, I'm going, you know, hell yeah. It gives you a standard to have to, you know, maintain and live up to, you know. So it's I'm enjoying it up here. We're having a good time. And but I got to go, you know, Crosby, we always have this conversation every year. We've been doing this for a long time. He and I, you know, do this show. And I want to hear about all the clipboards that come visit him in the last year. You know, we're going to find out. Dr. Frank Tambury, Tyranny Report. Peace. Thanks, Frank.
Bye-bye.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Ooh, more special edition of Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Lancaster, New Hampshire at Porcupine Freedom Festival. Today is Thursday. Man, we're already in the Thursday. Damn. It didn't used to start until Thursday. You know, now it's just, man, it's, I don't know, all summer, whatever. But what we did this morning, we interviewed Richard Grove, and we had a computer thing. I think I might have lost it. You know, it's in there. I'm trying to save it, but it was an awesome interview, and we haven't told him yet. So, but one of his students here, and you took autonomy, right?
I did.
You know, so one of his students here, she's going to tell us all about her project and what she got out of that. Because we were going to start talking about it. I go, no. I want to do the interview. I want to get the whole thing because I have not done the autonomy class. Now, of course, I'm very supportive of anything Richard does. You know, I'm like, go for it. But, you know, I've been on some of the podcasts and come on and talk yak a little bit. But, you know, man, I'm so busy. But so many people have told me how much they've gotten out of it. And a lot of it is just, you know, encouragement in the community itself. You go through, you know, five you know, graduating classes of this, after a while, you have, you know, some of the alum enjoy it so much, they just, they'll pay for it again. They'll come back and do it, or they'll be in examples for a lot of the things that are being done. Now, Lisa Manfredi has something she calls wealth battle, arming individual, you know, for financial education, freedom. And we have wealthbattle.com. Now, one of her marketing things that she has very cool, I got around my neck, is dog tag. And it has wealth battle. Now, it's, and then it goes, I Borsi, you know, explain that. I Borsi, what's that mean?
It doesn't mean anything. We made it up. But it's the 7 steps to exit the rat race. We have a lot of people that are trading their time for money, and that sucks. So we're teaching people how to get out of the rat race. So the first step is income, budget, IB, opportunity fund, ascend the pyramid of wealth battle, reduce the number of hours you're putting into things, speculate, and then exit.
So it does stand for something.
Yeah, but we made it up.
Okay. Whatever. You know, you get to make it up. You know how many things I made up? You know, it stands for whatever I make up. You know, the bulletproof, be your own bank.
Yeah, it's the best BYOB.
Yeah, BYOB. I'm going, BYOB, what's that? Be your own bank. Oh, okay, well, I'm into that. Debt destroyer, opportunity, GPU, what does that mean?
Grow, protect, and use your money.
See, what you did is you took a dog tag, you put some acronyms in there, and you made a lot of words. That's what you did.
I did.
You know, the what's interesting about this is this. I'll tell you what. As we're looking around, and we have a full thing here, you know, Porkfest is like a bunch of people's. And what's that noise? Oh, it's a coffee maker. I was going, what the hell is that? Donna's over there making some coffee. Thank you, baby. You have all these people here, and a lot of them, I remember a lot of these guys, they filthy, stinking crypto money. You know, they went in and I got some now. Let me tell you about my problem, what I did, and what freedom, how I wanted to, you know, emphasize my freedom with my money that I got now, you know, my wealth that I had in crypto. What shall I do right after I buy this pimp-ass fifth wheel with 4 pop-outs and the ATV? But, you know, they got plans. Well, according to what? I mean, what would be their plan? Well, those people that have a lot of wealth or have already, you know, sought, we got friends for that and other people that kind of came up in development. But that's not really your niche that you're looking for. It's the young anarchist that really has no education, doesn't know what's going on, needs help, didn't get the education from the government education indoctrination camp. They have no idea how money works, what the vulnerabilities are, what they should even do it in, how to, I mean, there, and I saw that's when we were talking about for just like, oh, we got to do a show, because I see what you're offering as something that's a niche that needs somebody to fill that void. So I want you to go ahead, but before we get into that, I want you to talk about your experience with Richard Grove and autonomy and how that helped you, you know, kind of bring this to fruition, or was it already there and you just wanted more information, or this is something you selected out of that. So tell me about your autonomy experience.
For me, it was all about community. Like I feel like I finally found people who are interested in hearing the things that I was saying and that would challenge me and I could have real conversations with. So it was all the community. And then meeting people in real life, it's like, well, hey, we can meet virtually, but let's all meet up. And what can we build together?
Well, what do you want to build together? You don't know, or we can do it, or you're looking for a hippie commune? I mean, what?
Yeah. No, I did the like corporate thing for a long time. And then I decided that that didn't make any sense. So I quit.
Well, what was your slave job?
I was in sales. I sold capital equipment in the life sciences. It was lucrative and nobody knew what I was ever doing. And it was great. It was a great job.
Capital equipment in the life sciences. What the hell does that mean?
Like laboratory equipment, high-end laboratory equipment.
Okay. So you were supplying labs and, you know, big dimes, centrifuges and DNA.
Bigger than that. Table, chromatography, mass spec.
Stuff. Okay. Yeah. Got it.
Stuff that costs a lot of money.
So, and you would get commission, I imagine.
I did get commission. So, and a car. And it was like daddy took care of everything. I got gas and insurance and a computer and a phone and everything.
So what was your disillusionment with that?
I understood the business objectives and what the customers wanted and thought that we could align them. And management was too busy ducking under tables to listen. And a lot of my colleagues were retired in their jobs. And I just looked at my life and I didn't want to be that. I didn't want to look back decades down the line and say like, wow, I kept a job for a long time.
Well, what was your goal? I mean, then you probably made a little bit of money.
I didn't have a goal. I was clueless. I was put through school and then told to go to more school and then to get a job. And I did those things. And then I got the job. And I didn't know what was next.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you felt like you didn't build a life. I mean, you never got married.
I did not.
You know, you don't have children.
I do not.
You know, you got, you know, life experience you went through and you go, this is it. You know, I think I need to upgrade my life.
Yeah.
Well, your parents are supportive of what you're doing. You had a job. You go, yeah, you're making good money.
They loved my job.
You win.
Yeah, I did it. I did it. Whatever that meant.
Right. You weren't happy.
Yeah, I was not happy.
Were you unhappy?
I wasn't unhappy, but I was very scheduled.
You weren't satisfied.
I was not.
Well, tell me what, you know, this is very interesting. Here you have an accomplished, educated, making money, got a job kind of, you know, individual. How in the hell did you come across autonomy and growth?
Well, I started going to real estate investor summits with my brother. We got into real estate investing because I made money. I didn't know what to do with it. So my brother taught me about real estate. We started investing that, going to summits, meeting people like Robert Kiyosaki and Ed Griffin,
mm-hmm.
and learning from them.
You went to the Red Pill in Connecticut.
So then I went to Red Pill because of Ed Griffin.
Okay, I'll screw you up.
And then I walked in the room and I knew people from real estate and I knew people from Anarchapoco. And
okay, whoa, time out. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of skipped that I went to Anarchapoco thing.
Well, that happened.
Okay, why? Okay, seriously. All right. So you go to Anarchapoco, which year?
I went 2019 and 18.
Okay, why? How'd you even know about that? Why would you go to, you know, Acapulco in the middle of the, you know, freaking troubles of whatever the hell? I mean, why are you going to Anarchapoco? Of course, I've been a bunch of times. I mean, you know, why were you going?
I got really interested in, like, decentralization and crypto and trying to find myself. Like, what is it that I do with my life? Like, this job thing doesn't make sense to me. So I don't have one passion. I don't have a thing to do. So if I walk away from that, like, where do I put myself? And so I started through crypto, really started to explore, and through the financial system, started exploring, like, what was actually happening in the world.
Okay. Now, this is, we got to go back, you know, like your first memory at 3 years old crap. Because I'm, you know, we didn't get into why. I mean, here we're having, you're talking about, you know, you're offering these services, you went through autonomy and everything, and then I find out that you're going to Red Pills, you're going to Anarchapoco, and I'm going, whoa, 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 there's another path here we didn't even know about. So I'm going, why? Why would you go or even seek out or even know about Anarchapoco? How did that even happen?
I think it was...
Yeah, before we get to that... Yes. Tell me that's the first, you know, anarcho freedom oriented thing. I mean, did you all of a sudden you went to a Libertarian Party meeting when you were 13 or something? I mean,
no.
You know, I mean,
no, I was sleeping most of my life.
Okay, well, when did that, you started waking up, you even started looking? When did that happen?
I think when I really started getting my groove in a corporate job where everything was easy, my brain started to have room to think.
So what year was that?
Like late. Like 2015, really.
Okay. So 2015, thank you. That helps me a little bit. Holy crap. So 2015, we had already had in the country the 08 Levolution with Ron Paul. It's after the 12, you know, campaign.
Yeah.
So you kind of missed that. But, you know, were you aware of it at all or anything? So you kind of, you know, there was something going on there somewhere. And so then you have a
opportunity. I really thought that it was my job to have a job, just to be this person in life that goes in this trip.
That goes in the trash?
Correct.
Oh, okay. Correct.
Like, you're supposed to follow this path. So, like, yeah, there's all this stuff going on. It's interesting, and it makes me think about things, but, like, that's for other people, or I don't know.
So what changed? It's 2015. You're on the corporate ladder of going, something happened.
Yeah. I don't know, but I changed a lot of things all at once.
Something happened. You're not sharing. You're on the couch. Tell me about your relationship with your mother. I mean, whatever. So I'm going, what happened? There was some 15, you saw some commercial, you stubbed your toe on something. Some politician said something stupid or something happened. What happened?
I've been studying for years, and I really think it was going down the financial system rabbit hole. Because I was in a corporate job, and I was doing the things I was supposed to do. I was allocating my funds to like 401ks, and they'd ask me to make an election for something, and I didn't know what that meant, and I would still call my dad. I'm like, Dad, what am I supposed to do? And I'm like, I can't call my dad my whole life. And so I started learning and realized what a scam all of that was, and that I wouldn't have realized that until I was in the middle of retirement and was not capable of feeding myself.
Yeah.
And so I started learning. And the more I learned, it all seemed to be tied together in one system.
Okay. Here it is. I'm going to get my answer. You spoke highly of G. Edward Griffin. In the process of this, did you read Creature from Jekyll Island?
I have read.
Oh, so I'm going, okay. So when did you read Creature from Jekyll Island?
I don't know exactly, but I talked to him much more than I had before I had read the book. So it was more talking to him. Like,
okay, you talked to him. When did you talk to G. Edward? Is this after 15?
Yeah, that was after. That was actually after 15. So I guess I had somehow maybe I read it before I talked to him. You know what? I don't know. I don't know chronology.
See, you're killing me here. You know, this is what you wonder, you know, what I want to talk to you about this is, you know, okay, wow, this autonomy, man, the epiphany of the, you were already going down this path before.
Yeah.
You had already kind of, you know, come to that you weren't satisfied and happy with your life. You're looking at different things. For some reason, you heard something about crypto. So you watched what? Your first YouTube?
All of the YouTube.
James Babb. Okay.
I'm not interrupting.
No. She's looking for her next bow, and I'm going, yeah, James. Of course, James, man. He's cool, man. It's James. He'll hook you up. So anyway, we'll get you taken care of later. But yeah, I just wanted you guys to meet because she's looking for, you know, men in the movement, and they're asking me, and I'm going, you know, you ask me or ask James. Or hell, James, you know.
Lynn introduced us this morning.
Oh, did you? Okay. Boom. See, we're all good.
That's right.
So we'll get it all hooked up. See, everybody's thinking the same. All right. So we'll definitely get you later, James.
Uh-oh. Thanks for the coffee.
See you later.
Now you see why James, you know, he's cool. But the you go through life, you're still in early 30s.
Yeah.
By the early 30s, you think, man, I'm not digging it yet. You know, this is not, you know, so.
I quit my job. I broke off my engagement. I did a lot of things. Everything changed.
Oh, so you were engaged to be married?
I was. That was silly.
Okay. All right. See, we were missing all this shit. So when I asked you, were you married? You failed to explain this I was engaged thing. Okay. So you broke off that because what?
I could see life playing out and it was okay. But it wasn't really satisfying. So it was worth taking the risk to like find myself and figure out what I really wanted.
Where did that motivation come from? Why would you even want to do that?
Was it parents, mom, dad, uncle, what? It was a very pivotal point in life and I can't really explain it. Maybe you can figure it out for me.
No, I'm trying. I got you on the couch here, but I'm going to find out what the hell happened.
Until that point, I had the mentality. I always ran my own thing, but I told myself the things that I was told when I was a kid, like, you're shy. I'm not shy. Or just being compliant. I was pretty compliant.
All right, let me go ahead and ask you that. It'll get personal. You know, I hate doing this like it really means anything, but I mean, your IQ, I mean, how smart do you think you are? What was your SATs? You know, that kind of crap.
I'm pretty smart. I don't know what my IQ is.
So it's above, you know, 80. I mean,
smarter,
you know,
than the average bear.
Right. You're smarter than the average bear. So see, what I'm trying to do is a lot of the audience are listening to this and going, yeah, that's kind of me. I thought that. I knew somebody like that. There's, you know, there's some trigger. And if we knew what the trigger was to get people like you, a lot of us, what we've been sitting here talking about. What's your name? Mike over here, you know, he's asked a lot of these same questions. You know, you went through autonomy, right? So you these very same questions, you're going, well, if we knew what it was that gets you to look, hell, we'd put that in everybody's Cheerios or something. I mean, you know, yeah. We want to make sure that we replicate that. So I'm wondering, what was it?
It's like I studied the systems in corporate and I found ways to be successful in it. And it made everyone else uncomfortable. They didn't like that I found a niche for myself and they wanted me to share what my secret sauce was because there must be some formula that everyone else could follow to be just like me. And I there was nothing to share like that. And that I could see like how to work their system and I wasn't going to enlighten them. And so that made me an outcast. And so I was like, I'm doing all the right things. I'm successful.
You weren't a team player.
I was called not a team player. And I was de-incentivized for selling too much. They give you commissions. They give you commission to a point. And then once you get above a certain percentage, they de-incentivize you for selling. Who does that in sales? But none of it made sense to me. And then when I learned about the 401k and they said that I couldn't cash it out while I was employed, I said, all right, I have to quit. I have no idea what I'm going to do, but it's worth the risk.
You know, we had, you know, friends that would cash out their 401k. They would take the tax hit.
Yeah, I did that.
They would, you know,
penalty.
And screw you. I don't trust you. And I'm going to put it in precious metals or crypto or something else.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, the one of the financial planners that, you know, we were very encouraging of that's now doing very well is Tim Pachote, the Liberty Advisor, you know, that as a mid-30s young guy just took the hit. He said, I'm going to go speak at Anarchapoco and tell everybody what I know and how we can do it and convert over. And no, you can't. And you're not allowed. And you're Series 7 being jumped. Oh, yeah. Here's my $17,000 fee. I'm out. Screw you.
Yeah.
And he went and did it. And now he's doing great.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, you know, you got to have that courage.
I paid now, like $100,000. So, yeah, I took the hit. It was a sunk cost.
But did you put it where, you know, it kind of, and you made up your $100,000?
Well, what are the options? I leave it there and I let them control it the rest of my life, or I take the hit and now I have control and it's up to me to do something with it. That seemed like a better gamble.
Well, have you? Have you recovered your $100,000 yet?
Yeah, many times over.
No? It sucks to be them. So with this is, so when you're doing this program that you're trying to help people that, you know, so they can be in your position, so they didn't go through this wandering the desert looking for whatever.
Mm.
It doesn't seem like that, you know, the monetary becoming filthy, stinking richer is the goal.
No, but there's like a lot of things involved there. Like I felt like I had to be successful. There was some level of success that I was supposed to reach. And as a woman, like that wasn't very fulfilling. You know, I did those things. So I was like, who am I competing with? What am I doing? So I was very.
It seems like you still have a lot of questions.
Wasn't that life?
Well, tell me what answers you got from autonomy and why you chose that. How'd you even know about it? Or you met the guys at Connecticut Red Pill.
I met them. Yeah. I hung out at Rich and Lisa's and figured I should just join. I mean, that's why I joined. I didn't know. I didn't have a specific goal. I had some small companies I was working on that I thought maybe I could scale. But I think in autonomy, I realized that wasn't what I wanted to do. I didn't want to just take some random opportunity that I had found and made a business out of and try to grow that. I wanted to do something meaningful.
Well, how in the hell do you decide what is and is not meaningful? Man, that's a secret of life here.
Oh, I have an answer. Inquiring
minds are on the radio, want to know. Okay.
Well, where I ended up, I started talking to people, just getting to know people and listening to where they were challenged and there were themes. And then I started listening to myself for a change where I was interested in contributing and felt like I was adding value. And I paid attention to those themes.
Attention to what?
Themes.
Themes of what?
Those conversations, like where people were having challenges in life and I felt like I could add value and it was fun to do so. Like I could actually contribute and enjoy it.
Okay, so let me kind of paint a picture here and you tell me what's up. You go, you're looking for answers. You do some real estate investment that puts you in with Kiyosaki. You have, interest in finance. All of a sudden it's, the creature from Jekyll Island. You meet, you know, Ed Griffin. He's, you know, kind of an old bearded Richard, you know.
He's definitely a crusader.
Yeah, he has all this information. Yeah, we just had dinner with him a couple of weeks ago. We were at Red Pill up there. And he is a big influence on you. You have a great impact. I mean, impact on you there. You have a bunch of the autonomy guys. This is after their first class or whatever the hell, you know, they the army came to Red Pill in Connecticut where they are, you know, where Richard and Lisa are. And so you meet them. He seems kind of cool. He's got together. He's confident. He's got, you know, and he says all that right big corporate BS and, you know, slinging of whatever the hell he does, you know, because he's in sales mode, man. He's like, you know, you got to have, he's very confident.
I didn't really talk to Richard much there, I must say. I met up with someone that I had met at the lobby of the hotel in Mexico for an Acapulco. We became friends there in Acapulco. He was there at Red Pill and introduced me to his friends in Dallas, and they were in autonomy. They were the ones that kind of sold me on the idea of just being part of that community.
Okay, what was the idea they were selling you on? You need to be part of this idea, which is...
They were all in action. I'm so used to people and like freedom-minded people that are really good at listening to podcasts and reading books and sitting on a mountain of knowledge and not doing anything with it. Like getting a pat on the back from their mom or like winning arguments. I don't know. But these people were actually doing something. They were taking the stuff that they were learning and failing forward. Right. They were trying things out.
You know, that's kind of, you know, what's unique about Richard himself is that he can see that there's fundamental things that people lack skills or confidence a lot of times to do things that they already know how to do, you know, or their skills they can learn something they want to do and they can, you know, sustain themselves and help other people with it. You know, it's just that. And I don't really see that, you know, he can't. Probably provides a structure and, you know, we're going to learn together. But then everybody I talk to that's done autonomy, they just go and learn it themselves or with others and they make team. It's like a hackathon. You know, they're sitting there hacking, you know, life and you have a group of 3 to 5 come together and they're saving the planet. You know, and Richard goes, all right, next class. I mean, you know, and then he stays in touch with everybody. So when you go after Connecticut, Red Pill, you're going, all right, I should do this class. And it's not free. I mean, you know, it's like you got to put an investment. And a lot of it is investment of time. I mean, you know, it's like a class.
Yeah.
You know, how much of your time did it start taking up?
It can take up all of your time. And I feel like in that case, you end up not launching. So I listened in and out when it was convenient for me. And then when... Okay, the real value for me is they would all be hanging out in Discord in, it wasn't called a dojo at the time, but in a voice chat room. I would see people in there chatting with each other, and I would be faced with a business problem. And so I would jump in the room and say, I have this live problem right now. In 45 minutes, I have to go to a meeting to deal with it. Either do you have any advice, or this is what I'm thinking. Am I on track or not? Can you just give me some feedback? And to me, that was invaluable because now I have people that I feel like are on the same wavelength with me to some degree. It's not like I'm calling some random HR company and asking for their advice.
Well, how competent were they?
Autonomy people?
Yeah. I mean, they're there to get knowledge, you know, and all of a sudden they're mentoring to a successful woman that wants to go. I mean, what gave them notoriety?
Sometimes I need a perspective. I'm going to approach it in this manner. How does that communicate? Right? It's not necessarily the business decision. It's how do I effectively communicate this?
No, different perspective.
Yeah. Is this approach going to work? What's your perspective on that?
So were they generally accurate? Is it successful for you?
They would just give me feedback or ideas, and then I could take the ideas and synthesize them into something that worked for me.
So it gave you more confidence in the presentation or whatever you're doing.
And more minds. Sometimes I don't always think of everything. I mean, usually I do, but not always.
So then you're there and you start to, you kind of, you know, I say this to Richard. I go, hey, they found their tribe. No, it's not a tribe. Damn it. You know, it's, you know, but I'm going, yeah, you know, it's, whatever you want to call it. You're seeing that you're an appreciated add to a community.
Yeah.
And that's got to give you a little bit of a boost.
It was awesome. When I was in corporate and I started learning about the financial system and the 401k in particular, or qualified plans, I wanted to tell everyone about it because it was horrifying to me. The stuff that I learned was horrifying and seemed really dangerous. And it seemed irresponsible not to share with everyone. And nobody cared. Nobody wanted to hear what I was saying because they were doing the right thing by making their proper contributions. And so I started to think I was crazy. And so when I joined Autonomy and I started talking about the things that I cared about, people were listening. I was like, I have found people. This is great. Like, I'm not crazy. It's just I was speaking to the wrong audience.
Yeah, but a lot of the people in Autonomy probably had already made the decision, or they were out, or they knew, or they were just reaffirming what you're saying. Or did you have influence on them to get out?
A combination. I had influence on some of them to get out. Some had never contributed because they hadn't effectively earned enough income to do so. Some had no plan for the future. Some had a feeling that the system was rigged or off in some way, but so they hadn't broached the subject yet in their own minds. So,
what's the average age that you think of Autonomy, the people that are there?
I'd say 30s, 40s. But we've got some 17-year-olds, some 20s. We got a range, but I'd say 30s, 40s.
Yeah, it seems to me that, which kind of surprised me. I thought Autonomy would be more attracted to, like, the young, but it takes you going through your 20s, getting into your 30s to realize that you're not getting what you need for the rest of your life.
Yeah, when you're 20-something, you don't... You still think you're invincible.
You
haven't been challenged by life. You don't know what the issues are. You still think as a woman that you need to be successful and prove something to somebody.
Well, let's talk about the gender thing, because you've seen it go through back and forth, whatever. You've been successful, you know, individual. You know, that's, and you're a woman. So I'm going, is there a gender thing that, you know, some hindrance you think in your mind in corporate America? Do they have an advantage? You know, is it something that shouldn't be worried about? Is it something that, I mean, do we still, I thought I was supposed to not care about race and gender and all that stuff. And as soon as I get to the point inside, nah, I don't care. You're not caring right. You're not a care, Karen. You got to care right, you know? And I'm going, you know, seriously, you got to care this way. You're not caring. I'm going, shut up. You know, this content of character thing just went right out the window. So how does you think that? Is that a toxic environment? Is that a weapon? Is that just BS? Nobody pays attention. How does this gender race thing affect you and your perspective from being corporate America?
I mean, being in corporate, it was definitely a good old boys club. So it had its own challenges. But because I was different, and I didn't have to be inside the environment, inside the office pretty much ever. I just ran my own business. I just met my customers and I was a human being and they'd never experienced that before. They'd only experienced salespeople. And so I got to know people. And so I wasn't really affected by it. Income-wise, I have no idea the comparison. For some reason, we really never talk about money. And this is a theme. People don't talk about money. So we know very little about it. But I do think in life, it has impacted me. I don't think that being successful is the be all end all in life, whatever like they've defined as success. I think if I had realized that sooner, life would have been different for me. I don't feel like I needed to get degrees in neuroscience and biology and then work a corporate job and make a lot of money and feel like I needed to do all the things and prove all of the things because they're meaningless.
So did you feel advantage, disadvantage? It wasn't an issue. You don't care what?
I didn't find it to be an issue in corporate. I feel like I stood out because I was like a young female with short hair and I dressed up really well. And like, I was around a lot of men in suits.
Yeah,
they all blend together.
They were taking you to the strip clubs or what?
No, no.
So there was no palling around?
No.
You invited to the golf tournaments? So you didn't get to have a whole lot of social interaction with these guys?
No, like lunch. Yeah, nothing. Well, and I don't drink, did. So I don't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so there's, they go hunting, camping, anything. I mean, so there was no social with the men. You're kind of, you know, not that it bothered you. You give a crap. But I mean, there was the social aspect of it. You were successful. They just wanted your secrets and shut up.
Yeah. I mean, I think for clients, they treated me differently. I spent more time with my clients, but I generally had more like a million dads than the opposite. Like I would have customers take me out to learn how to fly fish in the grass more of that that kind of thing. Like,
well, that's cool. They liked you.
Yeah.
You know, so you had a good relationship at your. So what was the dissatisfaction? I'm still trying to drill in what freaking it's happened. There had to be something in you, or
it was so
a memory
easy.
At 10 years old or something.
You just, it was cushy. You could just do, you just, you know, you learned your secret formula. You sold stuff. You did well. You made a lot of money and you never challenged yourself. And that was really boring. There's got to be more to life than that. Can you imagine doing the same job? That's what I saw. My colleagues were retired in their jobs. Like, they'd be in the same job 30 years doing the same thing they did.
Okay. So what was, you have any hobbies? Was there something that made you impassioned? Do you have any extracurricular outside, you know, save the whales, something? I mean, anything?
I mean, I would go mountain biking and road riding and rock climbing and ice climbing and mountaineering.
I'm wanting to know what the hell is going to challenge you. I mean, holy crap, man. So you're looking to what? You want to be an ad to what? You want to be, appreciated for your contribution in the community or what? Because the only time.
I felt like I didn't have a voice. Like, I did all the things right, but nobody cared. You were just another person.
Okay. All right, we're getting there. Here we go. Why was it important to you to have a voice?
I had things to say.
Why did you think you had things to say? What was it you wanted to say? The microphone's right there.
I don't know. I felt like I saw the world differently than most of the people I was around on a daily basis. And I would pull different pieces together and it would make a picture that no one else saw. And I'd be like standing there by myself staring at this thing and nobody would get it.
Give me an example of something that you saw nobody else did.
I mean, it wasn't necessarily anything giant or profound. It was like everyday things that would happen. Noticing the little things in life or what was actually impacting somebody.
Well, what about, and then we can get into things like, you know, government policy and politics and philosophy and, you know, you can't ignore, you know, in any business, you know, even taxes or somebody going around telling you what you can and can't do and your property rights and your permit of a structure I want to shed. I mean, you know, it's just all this stuff and you go, what the hell? Did that have any impact on you? Are you looking at stupidity of somebody telling everybody else what to do?
Oh, I mean, there was stupidity in things like you would work a year, you would do really well, right? In sales, there's numbers. I mean, you're judged by numbers. But in the end, you know, you have a performance review and you're scored like a 1, 2, or 3. And that's it. Like, that's your whole performance. You're a 1, a 2, or a 3.
So you really sought, you know, appreciation.
Yeah.
So
I felt like I was doing great things. Like, I could think through problems. Like, I understand the science. I could, like...
You are not being fully utilized to your potential.
And it's like they didn't want to use that. There was somehow a threat.
Okay, now see, we're getting into another why. I always got these whys. Mm-hmm. Why was it important to you to be appreciated for what you could add? Where did that come from? Why do you care?
I honestly don't know.
Well, you felt unappreciated.
Yeah.
You had a lot of capability. You see you're smarter than most of the people around you. You see that you had a better understanding. Whenever you wanted to share it with someone, they didn't care. They didn't appreciate that one, that you even asked a question. They didn't even want to think about it. You know, hey, man, whatever, man. I got, you know.
Yeah, challenge the status quo because that makes my job harder.
Yeah, man. I just bought a new Corvette, man. I don't want to hear about your crap. You know, I just won the sales thing for a new Plaid Model S. I mean, you know, I don't want to, you know, think about, like, you know, life or anything. You're messing with my chi here. So I'm going, all right. So I'm starting to get a better understanding. I think the audience is too, that you can't articulate it because you're, you know, the fish in the water. I mean, you're not seeing this, but the dissatisfaction that you had is you had enormous capabilities.
You know, you can see in comparison to when you had success financially, you know, you were doing well in sales. There's no, and all they wanted from you was just how you were doing it. And there was no appreciation for the kind of person that you were, the opinions that you had on things. They're like, yeah, whatever. If you're not willing to give us your secret, we don't give a crap what you think about, whatever. You had all these things happening around you that you had impact on. And, you know, they weren't giving you your props. And you're going, all right, so maybe you go on a social media. Maybe you do a little Facebook. Maybe you're going, they're just a stupider, you know. And you're going, well, that didn't help. You know, did you try that? Were you engaging online anywhere?
No, I'm not. No. Nope.
Oh, that's probably the best thing ever happened to you right
there.
Yeah,
I didn't do that.
So then you start going around. You're seeing people that might be thinking the same way you are. Maybe a little off,
you know,
here and there.
I started talking to my brother more.
How old is he? Is he older or younger?
2 years older, and he was way ahead of me always. I remember when he first proposed moving out of the country, and I was like, you're nuts. Why would I ever move out of the country? But he's the one that introduced me to everything, pretty much everything.
Oh, my God. We go this to all this time, and we find out it's your older brother.
Oh,
what the hell? I'm sorry I didn't say sibling, okay? I got employer, coach, teacher, you know, I got parents, grandparents, but I'm sorry I didn't say brother, all right? Holy crap, you know, it's my fault, really, honestly. You know, I didn't say brother
that.
Or sister. Holy crap.
Hi, Mike.
So you have the older brother, you start talking to him, and he's, you know, he's encouraging you to, you know, you know, expand your horizons a little bit. Go, you know, go to this thing. Just go.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you won't be, whatever, go. And it sounds like you chose wisely in the, you know, kind of the freedom-oriented, liberty, anarchist, voluntarist, libertarian, whatever the hell. And was he the one that kind of suggested that path?
Yeah, I don't remember how he, I know more about his life than mine. I don't remember exactly how he got into it, but I know that he had studied real estate. He's a software engineer. Studied real estate heavily, was like, you can't fail with real estate. So he got involved in real estate heavily in like 2006.
Oh, you can fail in real estate.
Well, that's what he found out. So hard. He found that out. It was a really hard lesson. So then he started studying. So he was, as he's coding, as he's working on things, he always has something in his ear and he's learning. And so he started like feeding me bits and pieces of it. And so he started hanging out with the real estate guys, going on the real estate investor summits and bringing to our family tools about learning about ourselves and communicating. And he's been pivotal in my life for sure. He's the coolest.
Oh my God. You're listening to this, Mike. He's been pivotal in my life. He's just been job. We got, how long have we been doing this? I finally get to that. You know, crap. You know,
you should ask better questions.
You're killing me. You know, this is seriously. So you have a brother that, you know, it's kind of, you know, walking, went down his path and encouraging you and at least knew the direction that you're, you know, you need a little bit about cryptocurrency. You need to, you know, be your own bank. You need to, you know, pull yourself away from them managing everything. You get out of your 401k. You take the hit. You invest in whatever does well. You meet other people. You go to Red Pill. You meet, you know, autonomy people and everything. And you take the class.
Yeah.
Killing me.
So for years, my brother and I would go to an Acapulco together, and then a month later, we go to the real estate.
Oh, you went to an Acapulco with your brother.
Yeah.
Okay, so we forgot about him. Sorry, brother.
Investor summit.
Now, you don't count, man, until you do. You know, it's like.
But I also learned to be like the scrappy things. Like Ed Griffin, he'd sit down at dinner and he'd be like, "All right, when we were young, this is what we would do. We'd go to the casino and get bags of quarters." And we sift through them. We run upstairs to the hotel room and sift through them, get all the silver, give back the other quarters, do it again many times over, then put one in the slot machine so it looks like we're gambling and then go home. And so like people like that really gave me permission to use the like creativity that I had.
You know, a very wealthy friend of mine. They hear, and a lot of times, a lot of wealthy friends that I have, so when I do the same thing, I grill the crap out of them forever. Your first memory of finally find out it was their brother or sister or something. But the one of the guys, his first you know, gazillion dollars that he made was at like 13 or 14. And what he did is he realized that dimes, pennies, and nickels were worth more in their melt value than actually, you know, what they were, right? Kind of like the silver quarter thing. So what he did is he created, he goes, well, can I? Because he's a kid, he's smart, he was a genius. So he just goes, so what you're saying is, is I can order from the mint a crap load of these pennies, have them shipped over to this meltdown place, and I get the difference, and I don't have to, I just push a button and just do it, right? And they go, well, yeah. And he goes, well, let's do that, you know? So he did that until you couldn't do it anymore. You know, they made a leave. And then it was just
the, like one guy that ruins it for the rest of us.
One of those assholes. And then they did it again. They had, it was nickels or pennies, I think it was, that was going on. So he started doing it. He goes, yeah, we'll do it again. And they go, how do we change that again? We can't do that one, you know? And I just, these are the kind of people you go, well, they're just, well, yeah, I can do that, right? Okay, well, let's do that. And they go, oh, but you're violating not just, you know, the letter of, well, you may be able to get away with the letter of the law, but it's the spirit of, you're not under our control. You're not getting the memo. We're going to explain it to you. So this is the kind of thing that you were, you know, up against. You're just going, I'm just not appreciated for my awareness of what's going on. And when you go into autonomy, you ask questions, you get answers. You know, people need something. You're able to provide something for them. That satisfaction, you're in. And yeah, you're here at Porkfest with the autonomy guys.
Yeah. So 2015, I quit my corporate job. Whatever made me do all of those things at once, I did
the same job.
But then I didn't have a plan. I didn't have that passion. So I jumped at opportunities. I would look for opportunities. I saw them everywhere. And then I started moving on them. I took, like, what's the knowledge I learned in corporate? How do I leverage my money and use that to make myself more money, and then leverage that to make myself more money? So I did that for a number of years, but I was always chasing opportunities because I didn't have a place to belong. It's not like I really want to work on this project or build this.
Is there anything else to do?
Yeah. So it's just like, I see a need there. I must fulfill on that need because there may never be another need again for Lisa to fulfill on. So I better do that. Right? It was like a scarcity.
Okay,
mindset.
Now, have you gotten to the point yet that you're kind of like, you know, it's a community thing. You know, I want to advocate for a small town living of the man can suck it. Of we just need to be, and I want my picket fence home base of whatever. Where do you live?
I just sold my house in Boston.
So all this time you're living in Boston?
Yeah.
That was your problem right there. Okay, so you're in Boston.
Yeah.
And then you
now I'm in Delaware.
Somewhere? Oh, you're in Delaware.
Yeah.
In a small town?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how many people are there?
No idea.
I mean, a teeny tiny little bitty living space.
Soon, three fewer, because I just won an eviction court to get my tenants out of my house. I haven't paid in over a year.
Finally.
Yeah.
God, how did they even allow you to evict anybody now? I mean, I thought you weren't allowed to.
June 30th. So we had court on Monday, this past Monday.
Oh, so you didn't wait.
It took me from October to the 21st of June to get a court date. And I got it. Mm-hmm. Thank you, government.
Yeah, the system is jacked up.
So something that I've learned all this time is you can have a strategy, but your strategy needs to change.
Yeah.
You can't stick to one thing and think that's going to set you up for life.
Well, see, this is where it gets down to proper role of government. If they were protecting property rights, you know, mm-hmm. these wouldn't be, you know, you could make these kinds of decisions in a, you know, free market, right supporting society of, you can't evict.
Yeah.
You know, this is, there's fundamental things that are broken intentionally.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this is intentional.
I had a single family house in Boston. It was worth a fortune because there aren't many single family homes in Boston, and I didn't need all the space for myself. So when COVID happened, I left. I went, I spent a couple months in Pennsylvania, spent a couple months with the autonomy guy that got me into autonomy in Texas on his farm. And I was like, I never want to go back to the city. And people are still dumb enough to buy in the city, even though there aren't jobs there. The universities are not open. And so I figured strategy needs to change. Who knows what the government's going to do next? I better sell the property while it's still hot. So I cashed it in.
Well, but you rented it for a while, right?
The one in Boston was my primary residence. It did happen to cash flow.
It did what?
It did happen to cash flow, but it was my primary residence.
Well, this
the other, or your had tenants, wasn't that house?
Delaware.
Oh, okay, so that was Delaware. So now where are you going to light? Where are you going? You're living out of a tiny shoebox in a little middle of the road? What?
Yeah. I have my house in Delaware, and I'm mobile. I don't know. I'm looking for a home.
Well, what's your criteria?
Good people. Trees. There have to be trees with leaves on them. But mainly the right community. I want to belong somewhere. I would like to have food security. I'd like to have a place for my dog to run. I have a dog.
Have you met Jay and Shallon over there making, you know, they're good friends of a lot of us. Jay, he lives in Henniker, New Hampshire. And when all this stuff started, he has like a double domes. You know, there's a big dome property he had that was there. They, long story, but 10, 20 acres or something. But he's very experienced in livestock. You know, he deals with hay. He was a broker for that or something. You know, horses, cows, pigs, that kind of thing. So when all this started, he knew it was going to be a food thing. Mm-hmm. So he just started buying all these farm animals they're getting rid of, whatever he could get. And they had the Bardo Farms that you see, you know, yep, promoted around there. He's buds with them and they're, you know, doing. So all of a sudden, Free State Project, they're not going to starve. They have all kinds of, you know, pigs and court, and it's got their own slaughter, their own refrigeration of their own that we're going to feed ourselves. Everybody started growing gardens. And the thing that you saw when you're talking about a community, and then Brian, another guy, you know, bought a property that's close by, a bunch of other. I mean, you know, it's this community will not starve. They will be fine, but they only deal in cash, crypto, and precious metals. So when he would do any work for anybody, or like when he had a snow plowing, you know, business, when he was busy doing that, he goes, yep, it's $150, $100 crypto. And they go, well, our corporate, we have to have a check. I go, fine, it's $150.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, but we only get $150. And then it finally got to where, I don't even care. I don't want your money. You know, you're paying crypto, cash, or silver, or I don't want to talk to you. Well, we can't write. Hey, that's not my problem, you know? Mm-hmm. So this mentality, this attitude is what is up here. In fact, he does so well that we got him a computer, a Osmo, you know, like selfie stick super camera thing, and we're setting them up with IPFS to be able to, you know, put all this stuff on that populates a float account. We're going to make him the example of doing all this stuff for just the reason that you're talking about. There is a community here. And now the Free State and all this kind of stuff and the political and ouch, quit it and everything, I don't get in, I don't care. You know, but there's a lot of good guys in that too, and they overlap and so on. But as long as they're not putting a gun in my head telling me I have to vote for something or whatever, you know, I don't care. And they, if you're looking for, I'm Arizona, so I mean, you obviously weren't describing the desert, so you don't want to move there. But you know, here in New Hampshire, I love coming up here all the time. I've been coming up here since 07, and it's just been awesome. Winter, summer, the people, they got the community, and they would appreciate what you have to contribute.
I fear being alone, I guess. Like, I want to find the right community, but even then, what does that look like? Like, I've thought about redefining family because I'm just, it's just me and hopefully my dog. And so I feel like people take care of their families first, always. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always sort of the outsider, I'm always the bolt on. People like having me around because it's useful and convenient, but it's not quite the same.
Well, what do you think it is that you're not, I don't know, in a relationship? I mean, you were engaged. It's not like somebody didn't like you. I mean, you know, you're attractive. You're, you know, fairly, you know, put together, you're fit, you got that white privilege thing going on. I mean, you know, whatever, you know, you're pretty, you got, you know, straight teeth. What is it? Do you smell funny after four or something? I mean, what happens?
I have a couple things. I think that I'm on my own, so I have to do the things. I have to be bold and confident and strong and successful, and I have to be the one in charge all the time of my life because no one else is going to be. But that's not exactly who I would be in relationship. It's just what I have to be on my own. So there, you're either attracted to that or not. And if you're attracted to like the bold individual, I'm not going to be the, I don't want to be the dominant one in a relationship. I don't want to be the breadwinner. I don't want to be, you know, I want a strong man. And so it's hard to see both of those.
It's hard to find a strong man, you know, and, but they're here, you know, in the Liberty community, you know, there's a lot more than I think in a lot of other places, or at least they're trying to be. You know, that's why they're here.
Yeah,
you know?
And like dynamic, because life throws all kinds of stuff at us. So you might be really great at that one thing you're really great at, but what happens when something changes? So to be able to dance with life, I think is important. Interests will change, times will change.
Yeah, I am not really, you know, this is where, you know, that, the Ernie comes in, everybody, thanks. Because I do what I'm going to do right now. I don't think you should worry about it. It's going to happen. You just keep being you. There's a big giant line of guys waiting to come and meet you and want to be with you and do it. But I need to know what it is that, you know, the deal killer. I mean, you know, was it? Nah, never mind. Nah, never mind. Or are you open? I mean, what's it? What are you looking for? You want to be a team player in a relationship? I mean, you know, what is it you're looking for?
I want someone who's capable of taking care of their family.
Does it matter if they had a family or they, I mean, what are you looking for?
It depends. I'll give that it depends.
It depends.
I haven't created a lot of drama in my own life, so I kind of don't want to take on other people's drama.
You know, sometimes, you know, some of the guys are, you know, they come here with their kids and, they're an ad. They're awesome kids. You know, like my kids are, awesome. You know, if someone was to happen to me and Donna, you know, was, you know, out dating somebody, they'd meet our kids and go, oh, hell, I'll marry you for your kids, man. You know, so you don't want to, you know, put a woe on that. But it's and obviously you want that family thing. Boom, family, you know,
it depends on the situation.
I'm how picky do you think you are?
Very.
Okay, so I mean, you got criteria.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't do the eHarmony thing or nothing?
No, I have never done online dating.
And a version of that is because
I like meeting people in real life,
seeing what their lives. Meet them eventually.
Yeah, knowing something about who they are, what they're up to, maybe coming together somehow.
You know, this is something you're looking for projects. Okay, I got a project for you. Here you go. All right, I'll do it with you. You know, Richard and a lot of the guys are on this. We have a thing that Pirates Without Borders, you know, the site that we have. And one of the most recent letters that we did, we have Letters of Mark and Reprisal. So Captain Mark and the first mate is a female character, Reprisal. So she would have, you know, different perspective. Of course, it's guys writing it. But, you know, we have, you know, a different perspective. And the last letter, most recent one that we did, is called Scuttlebutt. Scuttlebutt is like a pirate term. It's kind of gossip around the water cooler kind of thing. And the point that we were making is that one of the problems that I've seen after doing this 30 years is that, you know, they go, oh, we got to have an intentional community here or hippie commune there, or we need to start this thing or a business or whatever the hell. And I'm going, you know, well, yeah, I'm not really into that. Well, we had this one. It was great and wonderful. Okay, well, why aren't you there? There was this one guy. There was this one girl. We had this thing. It was really successful. But there was this one family couple, individual, business owner, something. There was always something. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to, it always comes down to individuals. Then when you talk to people over time, because you have to get old to kind of see this stuff, you know. Well, I got that old, but, you know, you see this stuff, and it was always the same guy, the same type of person, the same type of woman. So I'm going, what we really need in the Liberty community, when you have this community we need to be part of thing, they are, that's always a light for the moth of the sociopath. They see there's an opportunity to take advantage of these guys. We're going to take advantage of their good nature. We're going to take advantage of their wealth. We're going to take advantage of, come in, I'll say the right thing. They have dead bodies and dead relationships behind them. And as they plow through getting rich of whatever the hell. You know, they serve their own purpose, or they just cause chaos because, you know, they're errors. They just want to cause chaos. So they're trolls. Well, if we could have a software that, you know, it's just a reputation system,
it's eBay Yelp for people. Mm-hmm. And over time, it just kind of, you know, that, well, I think this guy sucks. Well, I think he's good. Well, then you, time goes on, you wait, different people's opinion more. Eventually, you start outing the sociopaths. Yeah. You start outing the problem. And you start elevating the people that are the good guys. You know, that's coming. Sooner or later, we're going to be getting something like that. And I keep encouraging people to try to start thinking about that. We can code. I mean, I can make it happen if I wanted to. But it needs to be when people like in your position see the value of that. There was a woman that I had, and she won a bunch of entrepreneur awards and so on in business. And then she was into crypto and stuff too. She was a beautiful woman. She was probably 50, you know, but she, you know, had all her favorite plastic surgeons work on her. She was ready to, you know, she was, you know, out and about. She was swiping right, you know, but, you know, her thing was, is she had the same problem. These guys are just not, I need something that is more, that I need to evaluate the men. And I want the people, this is one thing I thought was interesting. And she was, she'd give you pops or lollipops. It was Lulu, whatever hell it was. I can't remember, but a lot of the audience remembers her because we had a couple really interesting conversations. And she goes, I'm at this conference. I'm in this big hotel. I just want to get laid. I mean, there's got to be somebody here. You know, I mean, what the hell, man? What do I got to go through here? So finally, she created this social media for women that where they would evaluate, and you got a reputation score on the men. So, you know, looking for satisfaction, nice guy, dude, you know, the measurements really, you know, are true or whatever the hell, you know, click here. And I'm going, well, hell yeah, I would do that. If I was a woman, you know, my mindset, I'm going, yeah, mom, I need some reputation score. I need some evaluation here. So we were talking, going, hey, we got the same mindset. So this stuff is already happening. But I'm seeing as crucial to the Liberty community, because the more successful we get, the more things that happen, the more resources that we have, it is a magnet to these people because we are vulnerable. Not everybody has gone through autonomy. You know, a lot of these guys are not, you know, mature financially or emotionally or socially, and they're taken advantage of. And you saw it in the crypto movement. A lot of these guys, man, they're on the freaking spectrum, I mean, way on the scale, and they're just not socially adept, and they don't see it coming. You know,
even if you are, it's hard. It's really hard. And it's really, I think we've been trained to make excuses for other people.
It's like, they take advantage of our good nature.
Yeah.
You know, the very things that you love about people or someone, it'd be compassion, empathy, love. These are not on a sociopath's radar screen.
I am the white light. The moths find me. So maybe I can be the beacon. They're out there.
Smile like that, you win. You know, I'm glad we had this conversation, and it took this long to find out it was your brother. Seriously, God, it never was that hard before. Damn. So, you know, sorry, Bubba. You know, I mean, you know, explain it to sis here. You know, you the man. Maybe she just didn't want it. It's like my kids. I remember times we're at a party or something and they didn't know I was like on the other side of the tree or they were over. And, you know, I remember this one woman, we made a sandbox thing with my grandkids and they go, you know, you must be proud of your dad. You know, he goes, we don't encourage him. So of course I'm sending that picture to the, you know, me on the shirt and everything. I know what they're doing. Going, oh no, don't encourage him. Oh no, make it stop. So it's, I'm really glad we had this conversation, but we didn't really get into the mechanism of autonomy. Before we finish, I want to get in that. You know, what do you think the style, how is it structured? I haven't done it. Oh. You know, anybody that does it, they're all enamored with it. I mean, your first day is what? I mean, how does it work?
It's based on a core curriculum that is 12 weeks and then there's bonus weeks, but there are Friday night lectures and you learn theoretical things, right? So Richard is this.
Do you have to do it live or can you tune into it?
Okay. Everything is recorded. All so right. You can listen to it at your leisure. But there are three components, I think. There's listening to these lectures and learning the thing. But things like high value skill sets like sales, you might know in theory how to do sales, but until you're actually trying it out, You don't know, because you can't dictate what people are going to say or how they're going to act. So Richard has integration exercises where he'll have you reach out to the community and practice the things, because then when it counts, you have had experience interacting with others, trying it out, getting your legs under you. And then just through the process of these integration exercises, you're learning who's in your community, what they're up to, who they are, you know, what they're about, and you build bonds that way. And they could be friendships, they could be business relationships. I mean, the sky's the limit there, and some cool stuff comes out of that.
And then they come back for, I don't know, encouragement from the group, ask questions. I mean, what is the group and the Discord and so on? What's the benefit there?
There's people that come in and out. You have lifetime access, so every season will come in and out. So if they're developing something new, or maybe they focused on inner work the first season they did it, and then they're working on becoming a freelancer or building a business, they'll come back to take the course from a different perspective and engage with the community from a different perspective and meet the new people that are enrolling. But people engage to ask questions or to build relationships or develop their skills. I mean, it's any number of things. Sometimes it's just, hey, I read about this thing, I thought you might find it interesting, might increase your knowledge, or Richard shared this. This was my take on it.
So what is the, you know, at what point do you become a troll? You know, because Richard always invites me to come on and to go, and, you know, you'd be, I'm going.
You instantly.
I'm sorry?
You'd be instantly a troll. I'm just kidding.
Right. Which is what I'm thinking. You know, I get in and I'm like, all right, well, I got something to say. Let me tell you, and I'll go on until somebody turns off the mic, you know, and then I'm going, I don't think you want me in the middle of your crap. You know, that's because I'd want to be an ad, but I'm not even sure, because I'm not familiar with, you know, the format. If anybody, I don't care what Ernie says, screw him, you know. So what is it that, you know, somebody would contribute? I mean, they come on and they're, you know, if somebody asks a question and they participate, and how many people are on an audio chat, you know, I'm wondering, holy crap, how do you even do it? I mean, we do the Union of the Unwanted thing, you know, the, you know, on YouTube or whatever. And I'm biting my tongue the whole time. I'm trying to be quiet. Don't say anything, you know.
Some of it's pure text. So you could type whatever you want and no one's going to stop you unless you're banned. But it could be you have an offer. Maybe you have a chat.
So it is in text? I thought it was audio.
There's audio, there's video, and there's text. So there's text channels. You can enter a room and have a conversation with somebody.
Is this 24/7 thing? Or
yeah.
Something? Really?
Yeah. So sometimes I'm driving really late and I'll just hop in a room to see if people are around to chat with. And amazing conversations happen in the middle of the night sometimes.
How many people are we looking at here?
At a time?
No, I mean, autonomy, the community has grown to 500 or something. Yeah, 500. I think that's what Richard said. Wow, this is awesome. So would you recommend this to certain people, anybody, everybody? I mean, you know, who would get the most out of autonomy?
I think there's a couple things. I think people that have had tons of ideas but have not executed on them, that's a big one. Because you can learn to create the methodology to actually bring things to life. It's not taking one course and learning one skill that you don't know how to plug into life. It's learning life and how do I make it work?
Right.
I think people that are looking to retool, or maybe they want to be better parents and they want to know what are people doing to educate their children. There's a little bit of everything, but people that want to take action and are looking for community and feedback and to develop their skills in whatever it is that they're doing. And you immediately have an audience. So if you have a course or an offering, you have people to talk to, and they'll give you feedback.
Down to what age? You know, I got grandchildren, the big gambit. I mean, I you know, my step-grandchildren are freaking sophomore, just graduated senior, 20 years old. You know, is it a gift that I give them? Is it something I go, look, if you'll do this, I'll pay for it. You would benefit at what age? I mean, what kind of life experience do you need to even get anything out of it?
So it depends. Like, the youngest people we have are 17, and one of the kids found it himself. I think he will be very successful because he realized the kind of education he was looking for and what he wanted to do with it. He didn't know like what the vertical would be. He just knew this is the way I want to learn and I want to bring something to the world. I think the people, like if they were kids, I doubt this is your experience, but kids that were just put into the public school system and they went to college and then they're spit out somewhere. They don't yet have the worldly experience to know what is of value and how to utilize it. So I think in that case, you need to go through some of the struggles in life to realize what's not working and then want to take control of it. It's like you kind of hit that rock bottom and you're like,
oh, he hit that at 17, you think?
I think he struggled with the public. Some kids struggle with the public school system and they realize it. You know, for me, I thought that's just the way it was. And if there was anything else that was for other people, that was not for me.
Well, this is why, you know, I think Richard Grove was so enamored and supportive of John Tyler Gatto that he understood what was really going on. And any kid that understands, there's been a lot of books, you know, just, you know, freaking drop out, man. I mean, you know. And for a 17-year-old to realize that, again, I'm asking him what, brother, you know, helped him come to that realization. And but to have a place to go to get you on the path, God, do I have to wait till I'm 35?
No.
You know, I'm wondering if autonomy, I mean, that might be an offshoot and a project of the people of autonomy to come up with a high school curriculum of something. Sure. I think that would be awesome. You know?
I think there's also, I'm going to say, for some reason, I can focus on the men more specifically. There's a lot of men that feel like they haven't effectively provided for their families or are restricted in what they can do in life because of financial resources mainly. So it's like, even can I take this course? It's like, well, that's a lot of money for a lot of people, right? They don't have the funds to do that. So to be able to learn how to earn whatever it is that you want to earn to do the things, but then also how to operate in the way that you want to operate. So how do you provide? Like things like etiquette, we end up talking about a lot because that's something that's important to me. I bring it up all the time. I'm like, I feel like etiquette's important. I think chivalry is important. We often don't talk about these things. That's not stuff we talked about in school. We don't talk about money. We don't talk about gender. We don't talk, right?
We don't talk about anything. It's worth a crap. They just want to know when the bell rings and go stand in line. Mm-hmm. You know, this is, I remember the reason we pulled out our children. My oldest was in third grade and I went down, you know, second, first, kindergarten, and our kids close together. And it was my son that was the second oldest. He's in second grade. And it was something really stupid. We worked on his homework. He didn't turn it in. You know, I said, he gets home that day. I go, oh, let's run it down there. Get partial credit. And, oh my God, it's so important. Right. Mm-hmm. So he goes, well, I made my day. You know, what's your problem? I made my day. And I'm like, made your day. What the hell does that mean? So I called the school and the teacher happened to still be in the office there. She hadn't left yet. And I said, we'll bring it down. She goes, no, he made his day. He's like, all right, explain this to me. What the hell? You don't do your homework. You make your day. I mean, how's that work? What they had done is they created this, you know, A-plus school. If 90% of the kids made their day, where they get this score from the school board of their great and wonderful, right? Which means what?
Yeah.
They started you every day with 50 points. If you went below 40 points, you didn't make your day. And he found out, like, if you violate their self-esteem or something, you get, like, 12 points, you know, you whatever, lost. But if you didn't turn in your homework, you only lost 3 points. If you didn't turn your homework in 2 days in a row, then you like didn't make your day or something. So my 7-year-old son had figured out that he only needed to do his homework on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And I'm going, what am I going to do? Blame him?
Yeah.
And I go, we're so done. That's it. This is the standard you guys have. And we're out of here. So it's just stupid stuff like that, that autonomy and, you know, people that come through that understand how stupid this stuff is. There's an enormous need for generations coming up and everybody sees it. There are other options. You know, people are homeschooling and so on. But if you have an autonomy that is for autonomy at a young age, that does what they do here. When you first start Porkfast for decade, you know, the first thing that the kids go to is a little kid's orientation of, hey, you gonna make some money walking dogs, picking up dog poop and taking people's trash out.
Yeah.
So you got all kinds of little businesses. When I pay kids to distribute these flyers, you know, I mean, they're all over, got the little scooters, man, boom, done. You know, this is the kind of thing that's going to, you know, we're not going to skip an entire another generation that got it wrong.
Yeah, for me, throughout life, I never would have done anything that was wrong. I never would have done something that I thought would disappoint someone. If I disappointed my parents, that seemed like something I could never recover from. I would never not turn in homework. I would never not get the top grade. Like, those are things that I had to do.
So
in my mind.
You're a 4.3 kind of person?
Yeah, I had to do those things or somehow I would be a complete failure in life. And then what? Who am I? And so I did that in corporate America too. And I was the best. I had to be the best. Of course I'm going to be the best. And you're not going to know it, right? I'm going to be very unassuming, but I'm going to be the best. And so I think that's why I started doing things like taking risks in things that didn't matter. Like, I was afraid of heights. I would go rock climbing. I'd jump out of planes. I would go hang gliding. I'd go in glider planes. I'd go mountaineering, like all the things that terrified me. It's like, I would get the fear thing out in those things.
Oh, holy crap. Right, here we go again, Mike. Okay. Why?
Because those things didn't matter, but I had to be the good little girl. They
can scare you and you're dead. I mean, you know, death-defying is death-defying. I mean, you know, if you're afraid of it,
yeah.
Why would you challenge yourself like that?
I felt like I wasn't challenged in the rest of life because the following the rules wasn't challenging, other than like it.
So you definitely crayoned inside the lines.
Oh my gosh, yes. I would outline it and then shade in perfectly. My best friend in first grade, we were best friends because there was an apple and I shaded it in perfectly and she kind of did the like hard crayon all over the place and I was so impressed by that. I was like, we have to be friends. I could never in a million worlds would I ever do that mess.
This is awesome to get to know you like this kind of person. See, these little things come out, you know. This is interesting to me. That, and the one thing to be as successful as you have been, to be an overachiever, I think you would, you know, classify. You're looking to please everyone. You did really well. Financially, you made and you got and, you know, you're hundreds of thousands of, you know, here I am. And you're unfulfilled.
Yeah.
You're not satisfied. There has to be something more. Mm-hmm. And then you found your way to the liberty, freedom oriented kind of an autonomy. And now you're going to try and help people financially. But the real solution would be, I feel that you are going to get exactly what you want by just letting people know that, oh my God, this quality of a woman's available. They're like, everybody's screaming, where are the women? Well, let me tell you where. Right here. Okay. You know, we got Lisa Manfredi. Is it I? Manfredi, Manfredi, what?
I say Manfredi.
Manfredi.
But it's not appropriate. Yeah. It's very Americanized. Go America.
All right. So what was it from?
It was Italian.
Well, how do you say it?
Manfredi is more appropriate, but I say Manfredi.
Whatever.
Yeah.
It's Lisa.
And yeah, we need to teach people about financial freedom because that's a thing.
You know, I'm really, you're so much more interesting than I anticipated. You know, I think I'm going to have some broken person here that had to, you know, freaking cope and deal and wanting to find. No, here's somebody that was, you know, the only broken thing about you is you were emphasizing expectations from people or something that didn't matter.
Yeah,
you know,
oh,
once
yeah.
you free yourself from that, then you're like, man, you got the rest of your life that is, you know, right before you at a time that the Phoenix is coming out. You know, this is awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. You know, this is the kind of thing that we try and promote. If we can get Wealth Battle in such a way that it's marketed in a banner ad towards the young, the new, the kind of, you know, a step by, you can, you know, let's get your plan at your 18 or 23 and whatever or something, you know, to try and break the cycle. And you have to get young because it's too late. I mean, yeah. You got to break the cycle.
Yes.
They haven't got this. You know, you went to school, you're like 4.37, whatever the hell, and you didn't hear shit about it, you know?
Nope.
So this is the kind of thing that I think that's an enormous value that I want to help with. You get me banner ads, I'm putting them up all over Freedom's Phoenix and we're pimping and regular guest of whatever.
Cool.
They're waiting on you now.
All right.
You know? So let's do it.
Okay.
I think this is awesome. And that's why I wanted to talk to you, because I saw your passion and what you wanted to do that was missing in your education and what you know, what's really important. But you know, one thing that you're still working on is who to share it with.
Yeah, totally.
You know, well, once you start doing this, they're going to want to share with you. The line forms right there. We're going to find out. This was a great conversation, Lisa. Thanks for spending time with me. It's wealthbattle.com, arming individuals for financial freedom, education, you know. And I think the people that, you know, even though you deal on a higher level and probably in your personal life and your corporate structure, I'm getting the impression that you see it's something that's missing for younger.
Definitely.
You know, out here, this is the place. I mean, I wish you'd had flyers like this where we just pass them out and we just need to start the marketing. We'll get it taken care of. Thank you, Lisa. This was awesome.
Thank you.
Peace.